Hi, this is Pastor Greg, and you're listening to Chosen Generation Radio. Get more at ChosenGenerationRadio.com. That's Chosen Generation Radio, where no topic is off limits and everything filtered through biblical glass.
My passion is the fight for freedom. My father fought for in World War II defending our country. Today, we are no longer fighting with guns. Instead, we are fighting an ideological battle for control of our country by contributing to causes that support your constitutional rights. I am Patriot Mobile.
Sexual predators and comprehensive sex education both break down inhibitions. That's what they start with. They also gain trust with the child and then slowly start to get them towards sexual activity.
Anything goes. You are teaching children adult child sex. You're teaching transgender issues. And, you know, children are moldable and influenced by that.
They said, okay, now we need you and your team to be able to explain what homosexuality is to a four-year-old student.
To introduce this kind of material at that age, frankly, it's child abuse.
You're going to teach our children that it's okay for any two children of any age, of any sex, to have sexual intercourse with each other as long as two components are present. One's using a condom and they both give consent. Did I hear that correctly?
It's not a neutral venue. There's no such thing. Okay, the schools are doing your job. They are discipling your children, but they're not discipling them in the faith of Jesus Christ.
It's only the exceptional child that even survives that system. Most do not survive. Most have not survived.
They believe that children are sexual from birth and that they deserve and have the right to be sexually active and to seek sexual pleasure. And if anyone is stopping them from that, then you are judging and oppressing them.
Even kindergarten now, they're wanting to teach them more and more perverse information and acts and put that into the children's minds. And once that poison is in a child's mind, it doesn't leave. They'll always remember what they learned. And it's by design, it's orchestrated.
In my humble opinion, it will be worse before it gets better.
Hi, I'm Tim Sheff, a certified natural health practitioner of over 40 years. I want to introduce you to a product that changed my life. The product's called Vibe, available at cgrwellness.com. I thought I was on a good nutritional program before I discovered Vibe. I was taking the traditional vitamin mineral tablets, wasn't really feeling any difference. So I tried Vibe. Vibe is an all-in-one vitamin mineral supplement. It's a liquid multivitamin. It's cold-pressed, whole-food sourced, non-radiated, gluten-free, and has no pasteurization. Vibe is like fresh juicing without all the work. It supports four areas of the body: cardiovascular health, immune health, anti-aging, and healthy cell replication. Vibe is available in a 32-ounce bottle for home use or a very handy 1-ounce travel packet for life on the go. The first time I tried Vibe, I had more energy in about 20 minutes. I started thinking clear, even believe I slept better. Get yours today at cgrwellness.com. Coupon code ChosenGenRadio at checkout and receive $20 off your first order of $50 or more. That's cgrwellness.com. Coupon code ChosenGenRadio. Get yours today.
These statements have not been evaluated by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Any of the products do not treat, reduce, cure, or prevent disease.
Welcome to Chosen Generation with your host, Pastor Greg Young.
But you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people, that you should shew forth the praises of Him who has called you out of darkness into His marvelous light, which in time past were not a people, but are now the people of God, which had not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy.
And now, Chosen Generation, where no topic is off limits and everything is filtered through biblical glasses. And now, here's your host, Pastor Greg.
And welcome back to Chosen Generation Radio, where no topic is off limits and everything is filtered through biblical glasses. Thanks so much for joining me. Hour number three. And very pleased to welcome my next guest to the program. She is with Newsbusters Media Research Center and CensorTrack.org. I want to welcome Tiaran Rose Mandelberg. T-Rose. T-Rose, welcome. Good to have you.
Thanks, Pastor Greg. Always glad to be here.
Well, so big news. Big news was the new indictment, the most recent indictment of President Trump, and it's interesting to note that media is back now to telling us that it was an insurrection. Remember that not long ago we had Ray Epps, right, was brought in to be talked to, and when he was brought in, it wasn't an insurrection anymore. It was just simply a protest. How's that work?
It's so funny. I just feel like there's these people that have a thesaurus and they just try to find words that they can, add to the conversation. Oh, now it's protest, now it's insurrection. It's like, oh my gosh, you guys, just get over it, frankly. Like, the fact is, Pastor Greg, the media wants us to stay on this indictment. They want us to stay on everything to bash former President Donald Trump. But then at the same time, which I think is pretty... not even coincidental. I think it's pretty intentional. At the same time, we've got the media barely even talked about Hunter Biden. There was a whole hearing that was a closed hearing. We couldn't even see what was happening in it. And it's like, the hypocrisy of these two, veins, whether it's former President Trump or Biden, it's like, it's just so, so clear and evident. And I saw something the other day, talking about how it's like people just choose to believe or choose to accept. Like, we know that these people or these entities are lying to us, but they're choosing to, a lot of people are just being brainwashed, or they're just hopping on the bandwagon and saying, you know what, I'm not even going to think critically about it because I just don't even want to. But I think that's exactly what the left wants. They don't want you to be thinking about how hypocritical they're acting. They don't want you to be thinking about the opposite side, but then it tarnishes or, potentially put their narrative in a sort of sticky situation where they have to defend themselves. So they just don't want us to even think about it. And that's why they're not going to cover it, or they're going to just cover only what they want.
Well, they're basically going to say that, and it is interesting, right, that it was done as closed doors. When they brought in the FBI whistleblowers, that wasn't closed doors. They raked those guys over the coals, and that was done, right out in the open where everybody could see.
Right.
They didn't do anything. I don't know. I'm not sure that I agree with the agreement by whoever has made the agreement to allow this to have been a closed door situation.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like I didn't even know it was going to be closed door, and then we went to go stream it, watch it. We're curious. What are they going to say? We didn't know, and it's just this whole like cherry picking of information. You and I both saw that firsthand with, and are still seeing it with the coronavirus, right? Like things were
there's one simple
up.
Hearing hack anyway.
Go ahead.
Sorry. There, things were covered up, things were censored, are censored still as you're dealing with. And it's like they just certain things they say, oh well, that's not gonna help us. You know how many doctors came out about vaccine hesitancy or about masking, and then those were the stories that were censored because the media, the left, the administration, they wanted you to just follow everything that they had to say. Same with this closed door thing. And then it's like, who, like you're saying, who gets to be the one that decides that that's the case? Who gets to say this one's going to be closed doors, and who gets to say this one's going to be open for everybody's interpretation and eyes? Like, who gets to be that sort of, I would say, dictator in this situation?
Right. Who gets to determine it? Well, you know, just as a quick example. So I have no idea what this individual is going to tell us, but just to give you an example, this is one of the commentators talking about the closed door session that took place. Here we go.
Biden's former business partners testified before the House Oversight Committee Monday in a closed door meeting. Devin Archer's appearance is part of the Republican-led investigation into the Biden family's business dealings. Sources have confirmed to CBS News that Archer testified that Hunter Biden put his father, who was vice president at the time, on speakerphone multiple times during business meetings. CBS News senior investigative correspondent Catherine Herridge joins me now from Washington. So, Catherine, what else do we know? What else are you hearing about what Devin Archer said during his testimony?
Well, John, both Republicans and Democrats told reporters after this transcribed interview of Devin Archer that he described Hunter Biden selling the Biden family brand. Republicans said this was a reference to Joe Biden and influence. Democrats said it was only the illusion of access to the father and to influence. And of course, we're at a disadvantage because we don't have independent access yet to that transcript, which should help clarify some of these questions.
Right. We're having to take their word for it, and everybody here has an interest. But
correct.
Let's stick with for a moment on that idea of selling the brand, because as we both know, in Washington, some people have made whole careers after based on just a single picture on their wall of themselves with a powerful person. So give us a sense of the continuum that might be discussed here. Is there any evidence that the current president, the former vice president, was selling anything more than just kind of his stature in the room? But also, is there new evidence that he was more around phone calls than he's previously said he was?
Well, I think the simple explanation is that the testimony today, and I say this because both Republicans and Democrats talked about these speaker phone calls Hunter Biden would have when he was sometimes at these sort of working business dinners and his father would be on the line. It sort of undercuts the president's earlier claims that he had sort of no visibility, didn't talk at all about to his son about business. The other side of the coin is that we heard from Democrats that Devin Archer never said that he saw his business partner talk with then Vice President Biden specifically about business deals or influencing policy, especially when it came to Ukraine. They were sitting on the board of that energy firm that was under investigation at that time in that country.
And finally, Catherine, what, if anything, does this mean with respect to the plea deal that Hunter Biden is in the middle of trying to get back on the right side of?
Well, I think that's an excellent question, John, that really takes us to the next step. What we apparently heard from Devin Archer, again, we've got to look at that transcript independently, is it talks about Hunter Biden's work acting on behalf of foreign business entities. For example, this Ukraine energy firm, Burisma. And one of the lingering questions in that federal investigation is whether his actions qualified him to register under the Foreign Agents Registration Act. So in other words, being a lobbyist here in the United States for foreign interests. And that was one of the issues that scuppered the deal last week. There was not agreement, as you recall, between the prosecutors and the defense over whether the plea might shield him from any future charges. And one of them was what they call a FARA violation.
Catherine Herridge in
Washington. All right. So I don't know your assessment of that, T. Rose.
You know, Pastor Greg, it just goes back to the whole idea that there is not this level of fairness or equality in this nation that's supposed to be, you know, the land of the free, the land where everybody's accepted and respected, right? I'm flabbergasted at hearing that, but also not super, you know, shocked but not surprised, that kind of attitude.
I found there were points in there where they did at least acknowledge that, you know, Hunter Biden might well have been acting as a as an agent for a foreign entity. That's a good piece of information. And certainly, you know, she made the comment that, you know, it does lend to the idea that Joe Biden was peddling. Now, if you take, you know, if you take that testimony and then you add in his own, Joe Biden's own words saying, I told them if they didn't do what I told them to do and stop that investigation, then this is what was going to happen. I mean, I don't know how much more plain it could be that Joe Biden, as Vice President of the United States, now not only was he influencing a foreign entity, but he was doing so on behalf of a company that he had direct business ties to the outcome.
Right. And then, you know, at the same time, we're seeing about, I saw this piece about, let's see, Newsbusters, we wrote it. Nanette spent nearly 25 minutes on the latest Trump indictment that was written yesterday. And it's like, they're so obsessed with this, but then when it comes to the president who's currently in office, right, they're all spending so much time worrying about Donald Trump, and then they're completely ignoring all of the scandals of President Biden. And it's like, which one? Yes, I mean, it's important to look at both for sure, but which one is currently in the position of power? Shouldn't we be investigating whether he, or, you know, whether or not he should be or is in the right or the wrong? And like you're saying, there's plenty of evidence to back up how he was involved with these scandals with Hunter Biden. And it's like, regardless of that, you know, why isn't he being indicted? Why isn't he being, you know, impeached? Like, you know what I mean? It's just so unfair.
Let's shift conversations for a minute. You know, and something that I have had seen in one of my reels, and I guess I should have posted the videos, and now I'm kind of kicking myself for having not done it, but they were just so blatant. But a number of videos, South African videos, where you had children that are chanting about killing white people. There was another video that was up on Twitter. A woman in one of the Muslim coverings who was basically saying, you know, if you want to come on and talk on my feed, you need to bow down to me and call me Lord. You know what I'm talking about?
No, I haven't seen that.
Oh, man. And then another one with a gentleman, a black gentleman, saying, you know, it's time to kill all white people. We're coming for you.
Yeah. I've got that one. I used that in my woke of the week this week. Flabbergasting. Insane.
Now, remind me where I find your piece.
You can go to mrctv.org. It just got posted about 20 minutes ago. Or newsbusters.org. I can send you this link really quick, but, you know, Libs of TikTok retweeted it, and it's from the National Identity Awareness Twitter page, and it said, F-U-C-K, every white man, woman, and child alive on this planet, all you mother effers need to die.
Yep.
That's what the man said, straight to the camera. And I'm thinking to myself, like, who in their right mind, even if you had those thoughts, who in their right mind would not only videotape themselves, but also post it to the internet? Like, what? And Patrick, you and I both know, like, if the roles were reversed in that case, if this man was a white man and saying that about African Americans, he would be in jail.
Or at least there would be some kind of an investigation as to who's he connected to, what group is he involved with. I mean, you know, that whole bit. Okay, so I see. Stop misgendering me, and I'm not a boy. The left only cares about themselves.
The African American complaining, if you want to play that.
Oh, okay, in that one. All right. So let me hang on a minute. I'm gonna bring that over, and yes, will play. Because my positioning was to say, look, you know what? The only thing that fixes this is to fix the root issue, and that is to recognize that the problem we have is a sin problem. But here we go. We'll play it right now.
I really had enough of this whole life, so I'm going to just go ahead and say it. F*** every white man, woman, and child alive on this planet. All of you motherfuckers need to die. All of you do. We need to go for a global recessive genetic purge by any means necessary. Every last one of you white man, woman, and child on this planet need to die.
Looks like...
So there you go. I mean, folks, that's what I was talking about. And I would, you know, if that was the only video that was out there like that, but it's not. That's the dangerous part, the sad part about this. It's not. And, you know, we're back to, you know, things like the knockout game. I mean, we're back to these instigations, all predicated on targeting a skin color. And it's dangerous, D-Rose. It's dangerous.
In the same tweet where, you know, somebody was reporting on this man, it said that a recent Rasmussen poll showed that 50% of Black Americans do not believe, quote, it is okay to be white. And it's like, what? People just don't think that you can be racist towards anything except African Americans, which is just obviously not true because, you know, you see it all the time, this sort of, like, hypocrisy when it comes to handling situations. Same with like pro-life versus pro-aborts. It's like the pro-aborts can go and attack and vandalize, but then the second, you know, with Mark House, for example, the second somebody says, hey, don't punch me in the face or don't punch my kid in the face, that's a pro-lifer, it's like pro-lifer acts like crazy person, you know, pushing right-wing propaganda. Like, it's just, it's so crazy to me that we're actually accepting these. I mean, we're not, but that people are actually accepting the fact that this is just how the world is. And it's like, people aren't standing up for it. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, and what's interesting about this is that you know, you're watching, okay, so let's see. So this is February 22nd it says it's Washington Examiner. Okay, now let's see. This is Restoring America, Washington Examiner. Only 54% of Black people think it's okay to be white. March 6, 2023. A recent poll from Rasmussen revealed that nearly half of all Black people aren't sure if it's okay to be white. It you know, this is not a surprising, and again, this is not an assault, but this is not surprising. When CRT, and this is the argument, right? CRT is not being taught in school. Yeah, it is being taught in school. And so, it's been being taught in school. It just wasn't identified, but it's been being taught in school for many, many years. And so you have individuals, it's just like the issue of LGBTQ, right? I mean,
right.
15 years ago, LGBTQ was 3%. Now the statistics indicate that between 16 and 25-year-olds are claiming as much as 40% fall somewhere in the LGBTQ scale.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wrote a piece about that a couple weeks ago, talking about how Ivy Leagues are becoming increasingly more populated with LGBTQ plus students, the survey was saying. And essentially, it's like, for one example, Brown, the university, had 14% of its student body identifying as not straight, so something other than regular, in 2010. But now, the number is 38%. And then same thing for Yale. 29% of Yale's 2023 class identified as something other than heterosexual when they were freshmen, whereas in 2019, only 15% were saying that they were not straight. So it's like, as time goes on, the more and more LGBTQ people are coming out. But there's numerous different things that I think could have gone into, like, specifically this Ivy League thing, whether it's people, you know, trying to, you know, leave the I'm rich, I'm entitled type of mold and into some sort of quote-unquote minority group, as they call themselves. Or, you know, they just choose to hop on this bandwagon. And it really is, like, people were worried about COVID, but Professor Greg, I think that this is the biggest social contagion that there is.
Well, it certainly, you know, I apologize. I was looking up to see one of the arguments that I was hearing. I've been watching this on social media, is people saying, well, but don't you know that, you know, most pedophiles are straight heterosexual white males? And my immediate reaction to that is that's not possible. And here's why, folks. Straight white male, that you the definition of that means a man who is attracted to women of appropriate age, okay? And that is a straight white male, period. That's what straight has always meant.
Right.
Straight means straight. Now, again, they are redefining and saying, well, but straight white male, actually, those are the... No, because if they're straight, then that means they're not pedophiles. Period.
Yes. It's true. It's true. And then also, don't forget, Pastor Greg, if you're straight and you don't want to date a transgender person, you're transphobic.
Because if you were straight, why would you want to date a trans person? You wouldn't be attracted to that because, hey, yeah. Guess what? That's what straight means. I know the whole idea here is you've got to change the definitions and you've got to vilify everybody that you want to vilify. It's crazy. All right, we're out of time. Hey, Julie Rogers joins me next. Dale and Evan Rogers' granddaughter. This is going to be such a cool interview because we're going to talk about traditional values, T-Rose, and how important traditional values are. And I don't know anybody who more represents traditional values than Dale Rogers. There you go. So we'll be back with that coming up. T-Rose Mandelberg, NewsbustersCensorTrack.org. If you're being censored, let them know. They want to help. CensorTrack.org. T-Rose, thanks for being with me. I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you, Pastor Greg.
All right, we're going to take our break, and we will be back with more coming up right after this.
So up next, we have ClanSlate. When you have different things like cancer and different diseases that are autoimmune related, it can really help with inflammation because you're helping clean the body. And ClanSlate is a formula that's made from a natural ortho-silic acid that basically is put into a formulation that's naturally occurring that uses different processes from polarization to heating to cooling to different types of catalysts which will go in the body and really help communicate to get rid of those things that don't need to be there. People don't understand why there's so many autoimmune disorders, but our environment's toxic. The land, air, and water have changed. We've been exposed to nuclear war, and the issue is if there's a nuclear bomb or there's pollution or there's war in one country, it actually affects everything up to the stratosphere. So we're all connected, and we've really got to clean things out.
You can pick up your clean slate today at cgrforlife.com. That's cgrforlife.com. Pick up your clean slate today.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, CEO of MyPillow. Retailers, shopping channels, and now even banks have tried to cancel myself and MyPillow. Well, during these times, your support has meant everything to us. So my employees and I want to personally thank each and every one of you by passing the savings directly on to you. We're selling the best products ever for the best prices ever. For example, we have my standard size MyPillow, regularly $69.98, now only $19.98 with your promo code. Or you can get custom fit with my premium queen size MyPillows, regularly $79.98, now just $29.98. Or my king size, regular $89.98, now just $34.98. So go to MyPillow.com now and use the promo code on your screen or call the 1-800 number below to receive this exclusive offer. If you do it right now, I'm going to include a free gift with your purchase. Thank you and God bless.
Hi, I'm Tim Sheff, a certified natural health practitioner of over 40 years. I want to introduce you to a product that changed my life. The product's called Vibe, available at cgrwellness.com. I thought I was on a good nutritional program before I discovered Vibe. I was taking the traditional vitamin and mineral tablets, wasn't really feeling any different. So I tried Vibe. Vibe is an all-in-one vitamin and mineral supplement. It's a liquid multivitamin. It's cold-pressed, whole-food sourced, non-radiated, gluten-free, and has no pasteurization. Vibe is like fresh juicing without all the work. It supports four areas of the body: cardiovascular health, immune health, anti-aging, and healthy cell replication. Vibe is available in a 32-ounce bottle for home use or a very handy 1-ounce travel packet for life on the go. The first time I tried Vibe, I had more energy in about 20 minutes. I started thinking clear, even believe I slept better. Get yours today at cgrwellness.com. Coupon code CHOSENGENRADIO at checkout and receive $20 off your first order of $50 or more. That's cgrwellness.com, coupon code CHOSENGENRADIO. Get yours today.
These statements have not been evaluated by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Neither products do not treat, reduce, cure, or prevent disease.
My passion is the fight for freedom. My father fought for World War II defending our country. Today, we are no longer fighting with guns. Instead, we are fighting an ideological battle for control of our country by contributing to causes that support your constitutional rights. I am Patriot Mobile.
You can support Chosen Generation and make a tax-deductible donation by visiting www.chosengenerationradio.com. And now, back to Chosen Generation with Pastor Greg.
And welcome back to Chosen Generation Radio, where no topic is off limits and everything is filtered through biblical glasses. And folks, I cannot think of a more traditional valued, family valued duo than Roy and Dale Rogers. They epitomized, they were heroes of the Old West, but they were heroes in real life. And their granddaughter has written a beautiful book entitled Your Heroes, My Grandparents, A Granddaughter's Love. And I want to welcome to the program Julie Rogers. Julie, welcome. Good to have you. Thanks for being here.
Really excited to be here. We worked a long time to get this spot to happen.
We did. We sure did. Yep, we absolutely did. We absolutely did. Well, I'm just thrilled to have you with me, and you're out on a book tour.
I am, and it's my people. I'm touring adult communities actually in Ohio, in the Cincinnati area, which is, you know, the independent living people who are the age that would remember Roy and Dale the best. And they're bringing their families and stuff in. It's just been wonderful.
You know, when we think about, you know, traditional values, I mean, that's one of the things that I think is really under, well, it's under assault today, quite frankly. And it's sad because their brand of values and you know, love for one another and all of that would all be considered to be political. I think about, you know, the Aldine song, right? You know, not in a small town. You know, I would think that a Roy Rogers would be championing Jason's song, right? He'd be saying, that's right. We don't want that. You know, folks, let's not, you know, that would be like the bad guys, right? You know, the guy that runs into the store to steal.
Yeah, and media isn't that friendly today like they were back then. And my grandparents might even be called out as being racists or something, where they absolutely were not, because we had a multiracial family. They adopted kids from all over the world. So, right.
Right.
It would be a tough time for them.
Talk to me about, let's talk a little bit about some of the memories, because that's really, the focal point of this book is not really, it's important, and let's not suggest for a minute that we don't want to honor these values, because they are so much a part of who Roy and Dale Rogers were, and they would want us, I think, to honor those values and to live by those values. But what are of the memories that you have as a grandchild, at what point did you realize that there's something about my grandparents that might be a little unique?
Well, whatever you grow up with is normal to you.
Sure.
That's what you think all families are busy doing. And so we would watch Grandpa's TV show, which was already into reruns when I was born. And we'd lay on the floor and Grandpa would be right there with us saying, "Go, Roy, get him, Roy, get those bad guys." And he'd be saying, "Yeah, Grandpa, get him." And to me, it was so fun and natural that I really believed that everybody's grandfather had a TV show. And this is just what kids did. And they made it so normal, and they didn't elevate themselves to be somebody special. They were just doing their job, and they loved it. But they loved their family and their grandchildren, their kids and grandchildren. And they just seamlessly seemed to do it all. And I don't know, now as an adult, having raised my own family, I don't know how they did it. It was a lot.
Yeah.
But they made it seem easy and happy. And it was always happy chaos at their house.
It's funny. I recently watched an interview that was done involving Sylvester Stallone and his daughters. And one of the girls was saying that they were out at a restaurant one time, right? And in public, and people kept coming by the table, right? And it was, and she was kind of a little girl, but it was at that point that she kind of went, "Gosh, I guess my dad's kind of like, really famous or something." You're saying that in your experience was a little bit different because, as a granddaughter rather than as a daughter, they were running reruns. They were more in a more retired setting, as it were, as opposed to in the middle of it, which is what your parents would have been engaged in, so to speak.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, am I off target, or am I kind of around the bullseye, kind of?
Around it, but they were not by any means retired. They had done the show, but they were on to doing a variety show, and they were doing guest spots, and they were doing movies. They were still very much in the public eye. And you're right, as far as Stallone's daughter was talking, I experienced that too. And when I was just, a little older than maybe five, I started remembering and experiencing that people would stop them. We would be out to dinner and people would stop by, and it was hard to eat because they would be coming up to us and they would stop us. And you just got to realize you just needed to be patient and wait. And
right.
I realized that people were not staring and talking and pointing at us. They were pointing at Grandma and Grandpa. So there was never a confusion like, "Oh, I'm somebody," or "This is really strange for me." I just knew it was their job. But I guess growing up with it, it still seemed normal. Mm-hmm. When I was in second grade, my teacher did call me up to the desk, and this was a big aha moment for me as far as who they were, because Grandpa was on the cover of the weekly reader, the Scholastic News, that week. And we still have that. I'm a teacher, and we still use that.
Wow.
But I didn't think that was a big deal. She pointed to it and said, "Julie, do you know who this is?" And she was all weird about it. And That's the part that I thought was really weird. You know,
right?
It's like, why are you acting like this?
Yeah, and you're like, well, of course I know who that is. That's Grandpa.
That's my grandpa. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he wanted to act very different with the class and talk about it and point it out and stuff. And that's when I went home that day and I said to my parents, "Okay, what is going on here?"
Right. Right.
Why? Because these were now people that I knew, and they weren't just strangers coming up. So it was kind of from all sides. It was kind of a slow understanding of, wow, okay, other people know my grandparents. They must be somebody. And that's now, where fame started to kind of take shape.
Now, I apologize, but was it your mom or your dad that was their child?
Oh, that's okay. It was my dad.
Okay.
And my dad was Tom, the oldest Roger sibling, and he was Dale's only biological son. She had him when she was 15.
Okay.
Grandpa had two biological and one adopted, and when they got married, they had four. There's going to be a quiz after this.
Right? I'm taking notes. I'm writing these down.
Well, then they had their own daughter together, but she unfortunately, very sadly, had Down syndrome, and that wasn't the sad part. The sad part was that she had severe heart problems along with Down syndrome, and she died a couple days before her second birthday.
Oh, wow.
So when they realized that and thought, oh, maybe we can't have kids, they really wanted a big family, so they started adopting. And so I have an aunt from, you know, this Native American. I had an aunt that was Scottish. I had an aunt that was Korea. I had an uncle with special needs that they adopted when he was about four or five, something like that.
Okay.
And so, that was the fam. Then the family grew, and it was a yours, mine, ours. Most of them were adopted, but it didn't matter. Everyone was the same in their eyes.
Wow. Now, for your dad, obviously now, so how old was he when Roy and Dale married?
He was just into college, so he was on his way to becoming, you know, an adult. He was a young adult, and so he was much older, maybe 10 years older than the kids. So it was like another family, sort of, but my grandma really relied on him during those years because, you know, she was getting used to being a stepmom. She had made a mess of her life with three other marriages, without God in her life, and she was chasing fame, and she was just a hot mess. And so my dad, she had sent my dad to live with her mom in Texas on the farm for about 6 years during a crucial time during when he was like 9, 10, 11, you know, that age. And he had been in Sunday school. He had gone to Boy Scouts. He had friends. He had a normal life there. And he had accepted Christ when he was down there. And he started looking at his mom thinking, you know, I love my mom dearly. And he knew that was his mom that he wasn't living with. But he felt real compassion for her. And he started praying for her. So wow. He prayed for her during this whole time. And when she married Grandpa, she was struggling. And so she went to my dad actually for advice in some regards. Not, okay. You know, he didn't
sure.
know
everything. Right.
But he was very wise for his age, and he invited her to go to church with him one day, and he said, Mom, I know you're looking, you're searching for something you're just not finding, and, you know, maybe it would make you feel good to come to church with me just, you know, one day. Why don't you come? And he didn't push her, but she came, and she was just, she said the pastor was talking straight to her, building a house upon the rock. And she knew that her marriage, even to Grandpa, this new marriage with all these stepkids, was not built upon the rock or any kind of rock. And so she did not make a decision that day, but he could see the sadness in her eyes.
Right.
And it just went to her heart. She went home, fell on her face and said, I want to change my life around. The next Sunday, she just flew down that aisle to go talk to someone and pray with someone.
Wow.
And Grandpa said, hey, don't bring that stuff around. Don't push me, you know. And she didn't, but her life was so different that he couldn't turn away from that. And he came to Christ through her. So it was kind of, it was from a 9-year-old boy praying, you know, for his mom that right. this whole thing got started. And that was my dad. Now, obviously, it was God's grace and God's power.
Sure.
But he used my dad.
And so now you have these two individuals who are able to really exemplify what it meant to have a transformative relationship with God through Christ, and to see their lives and their families having taken these broken people who were famous to a degree in front of the camera, but wounded and mm-hmm. hurting behind the closed doors, and now their lives become transformed.
Oh yeah. Yeah, very much so. And it was tough because a few months ago, I read online someone who just, it was a scathing review of them, that they were, you know, that they had affairs, they were, you know, a mess, they were this, they were that, you know, and that we hold them up as being good Christians. And it's like, wait a minute, they were the first ones to say, we were broken, we had, you know, been in sin, we had done a lot of things that we weren't proud of, but God in his grace pulled us out of that. And I think I think that's a real testimony to people today, because that's life. A lot of people are going through huge problems like that. And but they were discounting, saying, you know, we shouldn't look up to them as wonderful people. And it's like, well, no, God is the one who transformed this whole family. And
right.
Yeah. So
well, it's looking at them as what God can do, and what they were, you know, then representing on the other side of the cross, not mm-hmm. not what they had done in their past, but what they were doing. So how old were they when they both got saved?
Well, let's see. Grandma was 45 when I was born. And it was about when they were about 30, like early 30s. And they were just coming into their show, and her, you know, joining Grandpa on the show. She never wanted to be a cowgirl, and that's exactly where she ended up. She wanted to be glamorous, and she ended up in a cowboy hat. But she wouldn't have traded that for anything. And so it was right when they were adopting all these young kids. In fact, my dad and mom, sometimes when they were unable to, my dad and mom would take all the rest of the kids to church and Sunday school with them on Sundays.
Wow.
And, They were an integral part. I mean, the family was just so close. Everyone had their own place, and Grandma and Grandpa just their lives were forever just changed. I mean, that's obvious,
right?
But they used it in their work to really make a statement, and they never shied away from that. And yet they didn't beat you over the head with it. She could listen to anybody and ask questions. She truly wanted to know, why do you believe this way?
Mm-hmm.
And she was the easiest person for me to talk to. I never felt her judging me when I was in my teen years and my, you know, when I was making mistakes as a young adult and stuff. And I went to her for advice, and she was the best person. She was like this rock. And I could really trust her, and she had sound advice because she had been there. She had seen it, done it, heard it, you know, she had clout with me because she knew what she was talking about.
So they were probably in their late 30s then when they came to Christ, more than likely somewhere in that.
When they really had, yes.
And then
the kids were
well, and so and but your so that Yeah, so your dad would have been in his mid-teens when they got together, basically.
Right. He had just graduated high school. His last year of high school, they started, having a closer relationship. Mm-hmm. And she brought around my dad, and he got to know him. And then he went, she was still passing him off as her brother, which was a really horrible, horrible dark secret, because Hollywood said, no, you're never going to make it in Hollywood unless Tom is your younger brother, because that wasn't at the time a thing to do, to be a single mom. They frowned on that, and they thought it would really hamper her career. And my dad, when he went into the Army just outside of high school, he had to write down who his mom, who his parent was. And somebody saw that in the Army office and leaked it to the press.
Oh boy!
And that lie just came out, and she was very grateful. That was kind of the last fortress she had been holding up, and it just all fell away. And she, I'm free from that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, she would have been. I mean, because she was 15 when he was born, so. It's interesting. We have a son, and we have five kids. Our eldest is 18 years older than our youngest son.
Yeah. So yeah, that's very much like the Rogers family was.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, it's relative to age difference, he's our son, obviously, but the point being that, you can see that situation. And so she's running around saying, no, this is my brother. And it's interesting to think about that in terms of, when we think about Hollywood today, right? I mean, Hollywood's morality today is totally different. Yet that Dale had multiple marriages that failed. I mean, when you watch Walk the Line, and you watch the Johnny Cash story, right? And June Carter, and June had several different marriages that didn't work out, and yet she came from this very strong gospel oriented Christian family background, and there's a scene in the movie where there's a woman that has, gets in her face and is like, I can't even believe your parents still talk to you. It's interesting, Julie, when we think about that, right?
Yes. People are so judgmental. And we're all walking this path of life imperfectly. And some of us more imperfect than others. And they never touted that they were themselves great. They kept saying God reached down and saved us.
Right.
We are, there was nothing phony about them or arrogant.
Well, and there's a difference to me. There's three ways in my humble estimation, but as we're sharing the gospel, we're sharing it either to those that are truly lost, right? So there's a grace that you give to those that are truly lost. We're sharing it and dealing with those that are struggling, that know what truth is, want to get it right, but situations and things happen in their life that cause them to stumble, and they make choices, and those cause, but they're trying to get it right. And there's a way, and so we're always trying to restore them. Or there's the ones that know what's right, and are in rebellion. And God gives us very clear directions as to how we're supposed to deal with them as well. And in some instances, it is to say, hey, you know what? I can't be around you anymore until you get straightened out. Or are willing to say, I want to get straightened out, and I'm here to help you when you're ready to do that. But it's three very distinct differences in how we respond.
Right, right. And they had to live with their choices.
Sure.
And they understood that there are ramifications to the things that we do. And it's just even an earthly principle. You sow what you reap, you reap what you sow.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how they live their lives, knowing that principle. But then, you know, trusting, you know, God, each day you're gonna bring me through this and be able to possibly help somebody else who's in a bad way, because, you know, they could share their story and come alongside them and pray for them and help them. So they had a very interesting career, because here they were straddling Hollywood and their strong belief in Christ in their lives. And it didn't always mix, and they were blackballed for it.
Right.
And, you know, not back down to change, you know, to take the word Christ out of a song, or, you know, this or that.
Well, they had to create their own production company. They had to create their own shows. They had to create all of their own stuff. And then they had to find a place for it, a niche for it, so to speak, in order for it to get out there, so that they had the opportunity to present the messages that they wanted to present, knowing that they would have their detractors on both sides of that equation, both those within the body and those outside, those that didn't want that kind of message being propagated, and those that were saying, oh, well, who are you to be the one to be able to, you know, to be saying such a thing?
Right, exactly. It would be interesting how they would be, you know, welcomed into people's lives today, in that arena, in the arena of Hollywood, and because it's pretty brutal out there these days, and it was a different day back then,
right?
And I just I think they'd be really sad.
I just want to say that I'm so appreciative of all of the transparency here in the conversation that we're having. Okay, because, you know, I mean, Roy and Dale Rogers do represent great values. That is what they wanted people to think about, not about them, but about the principles, about the values themselves, about God first, and about what a difference that can make in your family by sharing what a difference it had made in their family once that was the fact.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, they never backed down, especially Grandma. She was fearless. I mean, she was just, she changed from, you know, chasing fame and wanting to just conform to whatever she had to do to get there to, hey, you know what? I am who I am. And if, you know, if you don't like it, you know, God still loves me and I'm still going to, you know, say my piece.
Amen.
About him and transform my life. So, you know, that's what was so I think so magnetic about their personalities, because they didn't beat you over the head with it and tell you had to do this. They were just saying, look, this is our life and what God has done in our broken selves.
Well, and if he can do it for us, then he can do it for you. I mean, that's really, and your tribute is to them for persevering through all of that and trying to help people to recognize the love of God, not in accepting sin, not in being okay with bad behavior, but that, hey, there's consequences for choices that you make, number one. There's redemption when there's repentance, and God's way works.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And that was their life in a nutshell. And it was a very interesting, they led very interesting lives doing what they did.
Hang on one quick second. I'm going to say goodbye to a part of my audience for Texas Fully Loaded. Take it away. And the rest of you, just hang tight. Get over to Clout Hub. There's a link there. I'm at Clout Hub at Pastor Greg CGR. And I will have this video up in just a little bit. Come on. There we go. Okay. All right. Let's continue for just a few minutes longer, if we may.
Yes.
Okay.
And you know, Graham and Ruth Graham and Johnny Cash and his wife,
June,
were very close friends. They were all, the six of them were close friends, and all of them were authentic Christians. You know, not like the, you know, whatever that you see on TV that maybe are not. And they were wonderful people, all of them.
It's you know, that raw, real authenticity and conviction. I mean, that's you know, that's the message I try. You and I had a great conversation, by the way. I just so thoroughly enjoyed our conversation. I don't know if you got a chance to watch my testimony regarding the accident and all that. I don't know if you've even had a chance. Did you see it?
Yeah. Yes. Oh, wow. Wow. We need to talk some more.
Amen. Well, listen, you know, and what I can say is that, you know, God prepared me for these moments, right? You know what I'm saying? He didn't just spring it on me. I've had trials and tribulations and challenges and still have them. But they are also what have drawn me so close to Him, and knowing what a difference it, man, I couldn't make it. I couldn't do this if I didn't know what I know about who He is.
Yes. And all of our experiences, bad, horrific in your case, you know, and otherwise, make us deeper in our faith. I mean, it brings us closer to God if we choose, you know, but it's a choice. Every day's a choice.
It is. And look, you know, you can have horrible experiences. You can have something bad happen, and then you can get mad about it. You can get angry. You can shake your fist. You can say it's God's fault. Or you can look at it and you can say, and I don't know, you could just say, hey, you know what? God's got a plan. And, you know, I mean, look, it's tough. There are days, as you know, as you can imagine, where it's hard to get out of bed and it hurts, and it's hard to go to sleep and it hurts. You know, and there are tears.
You know, when Debbie died, their daughter, who was my aunt, she was only 6 years older than me. I think that. I saw Grandma falling apart. When we walked in, there's a chapter in my book about Debbie and how, what kind of effect that had on me, her death. She died in a tragic bus accident, a church bus. And when she was, 13, 12, I saw Grandma falling apart, just sobbing. And that shook my world, because adults, you know, I was only six, and adults in my world were so safe. They weren't supposed to fall apart like that.
Mm.
And I'm very disturbed by the whole scene and ran and hid in the closet. It's in that chapter. But Grandma knew that I was upset by seeing her. And she said, you know, baby, it's okay. Life is sometimes hard, and it's okay to cry and even sob.
Yeah.
But God is still good all the time, and He is still the rock that we run to. So, I mean, it's going to be okay. I don't want you to be, you know, upset by seeing me upset.
Right.
And
right.
That really helped me through. I mean, my grandma showed me who she was even when I was six. And so I kind of chuckle when people say, well, did you know them? It's like, oh my gosh, she was, I was so close with her.
Yeah.
From the time I can even remember, I was close with her until she passed. And I'm just looking forward to seeing her You know, when I go, because I'm looking so forward to spending eternity with her and all the rest that have gone ahead. So Amen. I think that's one way that God helps us, you know, get older and prepare for the last part of our life, that it's not so scary because so many people are on the other side.
Right.
You know, it's like, right. Hey, I'm looking forward to this. So,
well, it's,
sorry, that was kind of a.
No. I think that was beautiful. It's because the issue is, again, you know, understanding the broader perspective, we're only living in a small portion of an eternal life, and really, you know, I mean, Paul talks about that. You know, this, you know, the sufferings of this age are fleeting in comparison to the promises and the hope that we have in Christ. And
right.
You know, my experience that God blessed me with, to have that encounter with him in heaven, to have that encounter with the Holy Spirit, all I can tell you is folks, it's real.
Yeah.
It's real.
It's real. It's great. It's, you know, this life, if you can keep it in perspective of eternity, you get through life a lot better.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem so bad. Even, you know, things around us, events and, you know, whatever's going on in the world, in our country today, when you put it into that perspective, it's like, it's going to be okay.
Yes.
Nothing is surprising God. This is supposed to happen.
Well, you know, read Revelation, read his letters to the churches. You know, I posted something about that on a stream talking about, there's apparently one of the number one songs, according to the Christian Post and Christian music right now, is a song by a trans person that dresses up as a drag queen when they perform.
Mm-hmm.
Christian music, supposedly, and they call themselves like Grammy Grant or something like that. It's a play on Amy Grant or Natalie Grant's name.
Yeah, but you know, I never thought I would see that this would be our lives. I mean, it's almost unbelievable, and yet I think God knew that this is going to happen.
First I Peter sure 2, right? Perilous times, right? You know,
yeah.
I mean, when you go down and you read that list, you know, how children behave towards their parents and loathing and loving this and hating that and all, I mean, just go down the list and look at what the warning was. You know, yeah. Jesus said in Matthew 24, I tell you these things so that you're not caught off guard, so that you're not surprised when it happens. You know, you just study the word and you'll understand. And people say, well, what about, you know, how could a loving God let this happen? Well, okay. Let's put this in the right perspective. This is his world. Now, you spit on his at him, you cuss him, you curse him. You know, I tell when I share, and I may have done it in the video that you watch, but when I share my testimony in India and I'm giving the invitation, one of the stories that the Holy Spirit sometimes has me tell is, imagine you have a guest come to your home, right? And you're going to serve a meal to that person. And you serve the meal to them and they say, oh, there must have been an explosion in your kitchen. And they're like, what do you mean? You know, it's like, whoa, I can see you've got to run. I understand that you've got to go. But the point of it is that if someone comes into your home and is abusive towards you, abusive and disrespectful towards the things in your home, How long are you going to let them stay in your house?
Right.
And yet right. God lets us enjoy all of his blessings, even when we are spitting on him and ungrateful and rebellious and disobedient.
Yeah. Well, and nothing is taking him by surprise. That's
no.
That's what makes me calm.
Amen.
Don't mind me. It makes me calm to know that he's still in control. You're right. It is his world.
Yeah.
And nothing is surprising him.
So, no, not at all. Here's the book.
As far as I'm concerned, all good.
Your Heroes, My Grandparents, A Granddaughter's Love. Your Heroes, My Grandparents, A Granddaughter's Love by Julie Rogers. Is it Pamela?
Camellia.
Camellia.
The flower, Camellia.
Yeah. Got it. Yeah. Julie, I thanks for staying over a little bit with me. I greatly appreciate it. Blessings to you, dear.
I really, really loved talking with you. I feel like we've just scratched the surface. So if you ever feel so inclined, I'd love to come back on and talk.
Fantastic. We will do it.
You know?
Yep.
It's good. And I need to send you a book.
I am so looking forward to that, 100%.
So would you send me your, let me know how to do that.
Okay, I will. I absolutely will. Well, thank
That'd
you.
Awesome.
Thank you so
thank
very
you so much.
Thank you so much
for having me.
What a blessing. Take
bless
care.
You.
All right. God bless you. Bye-bye, dear. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye.
All right, folks. Hey, wow. Just wow. Well, again, encourage you to pick up the book. Again, Your Heroes, My Grandparents, A Granddaughter's Love. And as real as it gets, you heard her talking about, you know, being good friends with Billy Graham and Ruth, Billy and Ruth Graham, and John and June Carter, or John and June Cash. The transformative power of the cross. I mentioned it earlier in the program, and I'll just leave you with that. Please just call on him. He loves you, and he wants to make a difference in your life. I love you. God bless you. Thanks for being with me today.